the Performance Training Academy podcast series with today's guest, James Buckingham. My name's Ashley Hoff, and in episode number 13, we are looking at the story behind James Buckingham. James has done a lot of work with us here at Performance Training Academy, building this podcast series, developing our advanced nutrition course, and in today's episode, we are simply looking at his journey into the health and fitness industry, growing his personal training business, and how he has become the owner of two gyms and what his plans are going forwards. Normally, we edit the very start of our podcast, but I've left it as it was at the recording today, just so you can hear two old guys trying to stay down with the kids. We hope you enjoy.
Keep it real, Ash. Keep it real. That's what they like.
Keep it real, homie. Right. Okay, so we're recording. Okay, so I always edit out the start bit, don't worry, mate. You can hear me right as well, can't you?
Yeah, spot on.
Okay. So welcome back to the Performance Training Academy podcast series. We are back for episode number 13. And we've been a bit quiet on here for a couple of weeks. We've had a little bit of a downtime away from podcasts. Life just getting in the way a little bit, work getting in the way a bit. But in this period of time, it's allowed us to reflect a little bit about what we've done so far, and obviously to plan for this one. At the end of the last podcast of episode 12, we said it will be interesting, I think, for a lot of people listening to what we do, especially listening to the podcast we've done with James Buckingham, to find out a little bit more about the man who is James Buckingham, what his story is, where he's come from, his journey in the fitness industry. I've known James for a number of years. He's also called Paddy. You've probably, if you listen to our podcast, you get the idea that I sometimes call him James, sometimes call him Paddy. But I've known him for a number of years and I've learned a lot from you, which we're going to get across into the podcast as we talk through your journey. So we're on episode 13. If you haven't listened to many of our podcasts so far, we've talked a lot with James, mostly with James, about nutrition. Looking at fasting, being fat adapted, looking at generic diets. And within this little couple of weeks downtime we've had, we've reflected and we've planned a lot more to come, still based a lot on nutrition, but also we're going to start going into the training side of things as well. And for those who haven't listened, we have also covered topics like anxiety, stress, supplements. So we've covered a lot so far. But before we carry on with any more great information from James, I thought it'd be really good to get his journey, what he's learned, where his learning has come from. So that's what today's podcast is all about. So morning, James. How are you?
Morning, Ash. Good to see you again. I can't believe number 13. Wow.
I know. Past a dozen. Yeah. With this little bit of downtime, we've got so much more planned. And this is what I love about the health and fitness industry with training and nutrition. There's so much to talk about, so much to discuss, so much to give clarity on. And that's what I really appreciate so far, having you on to give clarity to that massive topic affecting you, which is nutrition. And going forwards, we'll carry on that theme, but we'll also break into the training side of things a lot as well. So let's delve straight into this one then, James. The idea of this podcast is to give those who do listen to us an insight into who you are, where you've learned what you've learned, because I think that's always important. There's a lot of people nowadays which will say a lot of stuff on social media, on their articles and so forth, but you never really know where they get this information from. So we've been talking a lot about nutrition, especially with our advanced nutrition course and the seminars that we've done at the start of this year. But today would be a good idea to let people know where you've learned all of these, this good wisdom from. So let's get into the gist of it all. Before we get into the fitness industry, you grew up in Ireland. You're half Irish, half English. And so where did this journey start for you? You come from an athletic background from a young age, don't you?
Pretty much. I was going back in time. I'm 54 now, and it's worth mentioning that only because the way things have changed so much in, you know, back in the day, it was quite a bit more robust, maybe I should say, to maybe things now. I was born in Malaya in Penang, and then, cut a long story short, ended up in Ireland. but we're farmers, my family in Ireland. So straight away, that's a fairly physical kind of job. And then from a young age, while I was still going to school, I ended up running the farm for about a year or two while my dad was away. So once again, fairly physical and fairly responsible. And then at 18, joined the army. But going back, I did a lot of gymnastics when I was a kid. And, you know, the, your standard school, rugby, football, running, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of it in those days was really quite a lot compared to today's kind of kids, as it were. So, but gymnastics probably gave me a real good head start because I was fairly decent-ish at it, although the Irish gymnastics scene back in 1976 to 80 wasn't great. But, you know, what I'm trying to say, you're fairly coordinated, and it's a good idea for kids to do something where it needs a lot of coordination when they're kids. Yeah. That then stays with them for life. Mm-hmm. And that's quite an important, well-researched thing. Get your kids out doing something that needs a bit of coordination. Anyway, so what I'm trying to say is when I was young, I was fairly active. And then joined the army. And the branch of the army I joined at the age of 18 was the infantry. And the infantry basically is a little bit more of a physical job than maybe some other branches, because you're kind of on your feet and doing all that stuff. So once again, it was all pretty harsh and fairly high-end endurance-based. So there's a lot of our strength, certainly in my case, my strength maybe wasn't as good as it should have been, perhaps, to stop injuries. But my endurance output and cardiovascular output was, I'd say probably, without sounding too up myself, was pretty much probably a county standard or above at that infantry level. And then, of course, I did, this is broad brushstrokes, Ash, of course, but then did 22 years of that. Mm. so you can see a full life, basically, of fairly high-end endurance work.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd go to the gym and chuck some weights around and all that stuff because we wanted big guns and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really any method to it. We didn't really know what, you know, how would I get stronger? How would I have more strength endurance? How would I kind of know how to produce a more growth hormone effect from training, you know?
Mm.
The nuances of training, when you learn it properly, we didn't know, but we just kind of like lift weights, do what Arnold Schwarzenegger does, obviously better, and then do lots and lots of circuit style training. And then at the age of the ripe old age of 40, left, and very luckily, in the military, if you've done 1,000 years like I did, you get a kind of a free course. So I chose to do close protection work. We did a course up in Hereford. And I also kind of half paid for a residential personal training course, similar to what you do, Ash, but residential.
Yeah.
And we did 3 months, day in, day out. So that was quite good. You know, at the end of that, I ended up with a personal training level 3, same as everyone else, mm-hmm. A nutritional kind of certificate saying that I could talk about, you know, porridge, oats and beef.
Yeah.
And a sports therapy course. So I was fairly well-rounded and ready to then go into the industry from there. Mm. And I know I'm waffling on a bit, so I'll shut up. But then ended up in Fitness First with you back in 2006 and kind of evolved.
Yeah, it was,
we'll go into that a bit later on, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. 2006, was it, when you started there?
Yeah. Well, 2005, 2006, so that's when I left the army officially.
Well, mate, a few things there. Like, and this is what we'll go into the fitness industry, obviously. What I found interesting from talking to you many times over the years is how, when you got into the army, how old were you when you joined?
18.
You were 18, yeah? And what I found interesting is, especially like knowing you now and knowing what you know about training and health and nutrition, etc. When you're in the army, you didn't have that knowledge as such. You were, like you say, you were just like hammered with the endurance work day in, day out. And it, you know, I think anyone in the military will know when you're in that environment, it's pretty intense, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're going to get on to about what the military's like today as in terms of what it was back then. Not in terms of, is it harder, is it easier, but more in case of what they know actually in the military in terms of how they train their troops, etc. But you pointed out there, when you're in the army, it's very much endurance-based all the time, wasn't it? You know, it's working on cardiovascular. Knowing what you know now, is that the right way to train, what you were doing?
Yes, you're right. So back in my old sweaty old days, it really was a case of run for a long time and run as fast as you can for a long time, wearing as much kit as in your belt kit or your packs and your rifles and helmets and all that. So it really was to endure, the real true meaning of endurance. And the drop off, you know, waste ratio, if that's the right word, of let's say you had 40 young recruits, all of 18, bright and bushy-tailed, you know, the waste ratio, you'd certainly lose 65, 60% of them in an intake, whether it's through injuries or lads giving up or whatever.
Yeah.
So it just was enduring. And one of the things now that I know, if we had done a little bit more strength stuff, we would have had less injuries. And we know all this now anyway, because when you're a young lad, you can smash yourself to death because your joints will take it.
Yeah.
But later, it'll catch up with you. But if we just did a bit of strength stuff, we would muscularly more strong. Mm-hmm. Our joints wouldn't have to get the hammering. And now I'm a prime example with, you know, I've got a false knee, kind of quite bad arthritis in my elbow and shoulder. A bit knackered. But now, I mean, I've left the army 10 years ago, but I still train a lot of guys who are training for the Marines and stuff like that. And I talk to my old mates that are still kicking around. And thank God it's evolved now that there's more strength involvement. There's more lifting and carrying and weights and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I think they're getting better, you know, and certainly the training side of life seems to be improving. Old farts like me will reminisce when we meet in the pub and say, it's not like in my day. But actually, you know, the boys are still operating in, you know, war-torn areas, probably more than we ever did. So, you know, fair play to them.
And I suppose on that, I suppose at least with the amount of endurance work you were doing, it was still specific, wasn't it? You know, you had to, not just because you had to be physically fit and to be able to keep going and going and going with your kit on, which I suppose most people, like everyday Joes like me, would never know the hardships of being put to that sort of extreme like you did, with all your kit on, with your backpack, and just marching and trooping and stomping for miles upon miles. You know, for me, it's tiring if I just go for a run across the cliffs near where I live, sort of thing, you know, in my sports kit. But what you're pointing out there is people, it develops your mindset and a strong mindset. And that's probably why it's so specific as well, isn't it? Because to do, and I know, I've known you for a number of years. I know your mindset has definitely, it's a lot stronger than mine. You're a lot more disciplined than what I have. And I'm sure that's come from those 22 years in the military, and that's what that's geared towards. All that hard endurance work, it's all geared towards you know, keeping the strong ones there. Maybe the weak-minded ones can then go find a different alternative, and that's what it's for, isn't it?
It's true, Ash. Not that, you know, you're sounding that I'm better than you insofar as mindset. That's not what I'm talking about, for sure. No. But there was, back in those days, I'm not sure what it's like now, you know, I'm 10 years out of date. Back in those days, it really was kind of, if you couldn't keep up, you're a pussy, you know. I know it's not politically correct to say that, but that's how we were treated, you know. It's quite, you know, keep going. If you drop off, you're a bit of a knacker, you know, and that's the way it was. But, you know, you're building these guys to be physically fit and robust and mentally quite sharp. Because when you're cold, wet, tired, miserable, scared, and there's no end in sight, you have to dig in a little bit, you know, for mentally and physically. So it's a lot of, the endurance stuff was, you know, you're cold, you're wet, you're tired, you haven't slept, you're out in the field doing stuff, and it's relentless. And I don't sound like it's superhero training, of course it's not, but, you know, it certainly does breed a certain ilk of person, which you can talk about the personality of someone that does that type of thing. It's very often they come across as arrogant. You've got to be careful of that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the less arrogant you are.
I suppose on that, though, and to bring this into the fitness realm as well a little bit, you touched on as well about how the military nowadays are doing more strength work. And had you and the people around you done more strength training along with the endurance training, it would probably made your body stronger, made your joints stronger, made sure you weren't getting as many injuries, etc., which they hopefully now do. And I think they do now, just judging by speaking to people in the military as such. But that comes into the industry a lot, doesn't it? Like, let's go away from the military slightly. And if anyone out there listening to this does want to train for endurance work, whether that be for military based purposes or whether that's to run an extreme marathon or whatever it may be, the importance of weight bearing activity and weight training is of utmost importance, isn't it? Because it does make our body stronger, and you have to have a strong body to be able to deal with that amount of endurance, haven't you?
Yeah, well, that's so true, Ash. So you can only get, if you just kind of smash yourself all the time, you know, high end aerobics all the time, you'll get to a certain level for sure, and you will be aerobically fit, but you won't get to that extra sphere, as it were.
Yeah.
So if you do conjugated training, and what I mean by that is, you know, a little bit of, let's say you're I'll talk about the lady I'm programming for now. She's a rugby referee, and she's got an international level rugby referee, one of only a few. So you can imagine what she has to be good at. She has to be able to endure, and she has to be able to stop, start, sprint. She has to have certain amounts of high-end aerobics, long endurance aerobics. She has to be strong, you know, the whole spectrum. So how do you program for that? You don't just go run 5 miles every day. You know, that's not what it's about. So programming, you're right, for a little bit of strength, a little bit of muscular endurance, a little bit into long, steady state stuff to, you know, open up that ventricle of the heart to make it so the stroke volume is more. So it's not just a case of, you know, circuits, sprints, all that business. And if we had applied that to the army, it would have certainly helped. But that's by the by. So you're right. What you're talking about there is programming, Ash, and it's quite important that your programming, in my view, even if it's table tennis, involves some form of strength training, and then some form of, there's different types of aerobic work, as you know, but
yeah,
it's another story.
And that's stuff that we're going to be covering over our next lot of podcasts that we're going to do over the next few months. We've mentioned a lot. We're quite excited about talking about the training side of things. And that's where we can go into the importance of strength training, no matter what your discipline. You know, a lot of people think to lift weights is to either get big muscles or to get as strong as possible. But it's not just that. In fact, it's more than that. It's about making everybody's body strong, no matter what their discipline. So we'll definitely go into that. And one thing I picked out on then that you did mention is like the endurance work that you were made to do in the military is to make sure that you can endure that type of activity. And I think that's a really cool way to think about it. Endurance training, it's about a strong mindset and being able to endure these like real hard extremities that you're going to push your body through. Do you miss all the endurance work, mate? Do you still go out for a long ramble and a long run and stuff?
Well, I can't run now, mate, because I'm bloody broken. But I do, oddly, Ash, I know you're taking the piss, but it's quite funny because what I'm trying to do now is I'll go for a long, long walk, brisk walk like an old man. But I use that as recovery. And also I call it long, steady state cardio. And that increases your stroke volume of your heart. Mm. So although it's like an old man walks, which I do with my dog and I love it, it actually has a health benefit from an aerobic output point of view. So yes, I know you're taking the piss, but it is good recovery and getting out of the sun, and I'll shut up now.
No, but to be fair, a lot of people don't realise that a long walk at a brisk pace is exercise, isn't it? They feel like, oh, it's walking, it's not exercise, it's not worth it.
No, it's brilliant.
It's long, really, really slow distance training, and that's what is so important. And it's so easy to do, you know, it's so easy to do to bring those extra health benefits that gives us. You can go along, you can listen to a podcast, you can listen to one of our podcasts. You can
good shot, on- Ash, well done.
You like that one. but do you know what I mean? And that's what it's there for. So it's not just good for the cardiovascular side of things, it's good for the mindset and everything as well.
Yeah.
So, mate, I know you went through a lot in the military. I know you did a few tours, etc. Do you miss those days in the military? I mean, you've obviously got on memories as well, haven't you?
Well, of course, you've got lots of war stories to tell. I don't mean war stories, but, you know, kind of interesting stories and anecdotes to tell. But I don't now miss it. You know, I'm getting old and smelly. And the last 10 years of being in the military was quite tough insofar, I won't bore you with the details, but quite tough insofar as you're doing a lot of operations, as it were. Not high end, you know, not kinetic stuff, but, you know, you're away a lot. And that certainly takes its toll on your personal life. And, you know, your mindset insofar as, you know, you kind of get this insular thing. And when you then leave the army, you kind of go for this all embracing, everyone's looking out for you type of thing to nothing. And you go, shit. And also, weirdly, I touched on this yesterday, when I was talking about overtraining and stress. Well, if you are under, let's say, constant stress, let's say you're out on a 6-month tour of somewhere hostile, you've got this underlying fear going through you all the time and you don't realize it. And, you know, your libido will go down, your ability to sleep will go down. You'll always be kind of on edge, but you don't realize until you go back into normal society and you're kind of walking around Sainsbury's and you've got nothing. You've got no joy, no happiness, no nothing.
Yeah.
But I know we're branching off slightly to certain things. So to answer your question, I don't particularly miss it at all. And some of the guys that I really enjoyed their company, I keep in touch with those guys. And the rest, I don't. But, you know, they're all good lads. You know, it's just you move on, don't you?
Yeah. Mate, to be fair, you weren't going off on a tangent because, again, it comes back to what you've learned over the past 10, 15 years And I suppose it's what you know now about hormones and the body and the mind that you can probably look back now and understand what was going on in your body when you were under that constant stress, when you maybe not so much when you were in that time.
That, mate, that is so true. I can always equate to, you know, the extremes of when I was doing other things. I'll give you a little weird example about, you know, where we store fat and why we store fat. Just this always strikes me. I used to do a lot of work at Jungle Warfare School out in Brunei and Borneo and Central America. And you'd go out there for maybe 3 weeks to 6 weeks or whatever. And let's say you're doing a fairly hard course. Let's say you're doing a Jungle Warfare tracking course or long range recce patrol or something like that. You'd have to have certain amounts of equipment. You always have your comms kit and your ammunition and all that business. The only thing you could really skimp on was your rations. So we used to go in with half rations. So imagine 24-hour rations, we've got X amount of food, but we're going with half of that because we have to carry the shagging stuff and it's just hard work.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. If you went in there in fairly good shape and fairly lean, you would not lose a lot of weight at all. I remember in 4 weeks, was it 3 weeks? I only lost 1.5 kilos and that's half rations. So you know what I mean? And also, I didn't get a six pack at all. I still had a small layer of fat. I know I'm just looking back and it might sound trivial, but it's an interesting thing because you've got that constant stress for 4 weeks or something when you're out there. You're only in half rations. Why didn't I get a massive six pack or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I still carried a little thin layer of around belly fat, which now looking back after learning all this stuff, I realize because you're pumping out cortisol, you know, you're pumping out cortisol and you've got more cortisol receptors around your belly than you have anywhere else. That cortisol receptors that will suck all those nutrients and store them in your belly.
Yeah.
So in let's say 4 weeks on half rations, doing extremely endurance work, really, mate, it was quite full on, you know, towing around all day, you know, only losing about 1.5 kilos and still not being ripped.
Yeah.
You know, and now I know, I know what was going on there. I was stressing. And the other weird thing is you wouldn't get, there would be no sexual thoughts going through your head at all, which, as you know, cortisol up, testosterone down.
Yeah.
And I spoke about this yesterday. We're talking about athletes, and if they're overtraining, they won't be able to have, their libido will be down. And I certainly had that in the military for like 3 months with nothing. Much information, but it really is an important aspect, you know, of how we're smashing our bodies. And one of the telltale signs of smashing your bodies too much constantly is, you know, your sexual manifestation, shall we say, in the morning.
And on that, and it is because of what you know now, you can understand why that happened. Not so much the sexual manifestations, etc., but like the body fat on the abs, etc., you know. We spoke about this, I think, in a few podcasts ago, where we were talking about fat storage and the effects of cortisol on the body, etc. And I think, you know, it's like when you go on holiday. And on the opposite to what you just said, you know, you go 3-4 weeks in a high, very high stressful situation on limited rations, and yet you still don't get that six pack. On the flip side, if you're in this stressful situation that week in, week out, because you're at home, you're in your house, you're in your job, your mind doesn't always switch off. There's too many things going on in everyday life. And if you're in that point of stress, it's when you go away for those 3 or 4 weeks, when you can sometimes go away and eat probably not as good in terms of the foods that you should be eating, but because you completely switch off and because you have that stress-free lifestyle for a good few weeks consistently, you feel like you gain a bit better body composition because you're in that less stressful situation. And it comes back to, again, the effects of stress on our body is massive, isn't it? From the military side of things, from everyday life, it's massive.
So you've got two things there, Ash. Firstly, I just point out the what I was trying to say there is from modern day, you know, we talk about, a lot of coaches will talk about, let's just cut calories and you lose fat. Remember, I was on half rations. There's already nothing in them, half rations for like 3 or 4 weeks and only lost 1.5 kilos and still had a blurry belly. But my point is, you know, it's cortisol and half rations. It didn't work. And when you're on half rations, you're more cortisol. But on the flip side, as you rightly point out, if then you go away from, we're now in normal society and we're at normal work, and then you go away on holiday or whatever, and you know, you go to the buffet and you do all that good things, but after 2 weeks you probably find you're hornier and probably leaner. There's no stress, you're getting vitamin D3 and you're just relaxing a bit.
So
that's another thing altogether, mate. But it's interesting what you're pointing out. The more you learn, first, a couple of lessons I learned is I should have done more strength training when I was doing that high-end aerobic output work for sure.
Yeah.
And if I had known about nutrition back then, you know, because the tide is turning now and people realize the importance of maybe fueling themselves with fats and protein rather than just carbs for endurance. And the tide will certainly turn in another year or so. People realize that carbohydrates aren't needed at all for endurance. It can help, but it doesn't help as much as fats and protein.
But you know, this is the reason why I think this chat that we're doing today is important, because we are talking a lot about stuff. We have done a series of podcasts about the importance of protein and fats in the body, etc. You know, for someone who's maybe listened to all of our podcasts so far, it might sound like we're very much pro eating meat and meat only, the carnivore sort of diet, trying to stay away from vegetables and the vegan type of diet, and that might be coming across in the podcast we've done so far. But one reason why I've always listened to you over the years, and why we work together, and why we want to do this nutrition course, is because it's not like you've come into this industry with an average background. You haven't been to the military or something like this, and you just come into it and you learn a little bit about food, nutrition, training, and then you start promoting all this stuff. One reason why I've always enjoyed our chats is because you've always got a story that backs up a lot of the science that you're talking about. And it's true, because it's that whole thing, you've lived through it, you've been there, done it sort of scenario. And I'm not saying that you've done it all, mate, or anything like that, because I know you're modest and you say that you haven't, but that's the point, isn't it? You know, you've been through these scenarios where you have lived on very, very low calorie diets, not as a weight loss thing, but because of a necessity, you've had to do that. And that's why I always get a lot from the chats that we've had and discussions we've had when we're building our nutrition course, because you've had to have high carbohydrate diets and lived on a high carbohydrate diet. And that goes back to the army again. And we're going to get into the fitness industry in a second, but just to go back on that endurance, what were you eating when you're in the military? I think you were saying it was very pasta based meals all the time, wasn't it?
Well, there's a couple of things, Ash. Firstly, do you mind if I've got a couple of points there, mate? Do you mind if I waffle on about them? So the carb intake, I'll go back to, weirdly, coincidentally, this is, I'm writing a program which is interlink nutrition with the rugby referee lady. She's a good egg. She's a pretty high-end athlete, in fairness. And what people know me, probably think, oh, he just eats paleo and he just eats protein. He just takes chunks out of animals and that's it. But actually on her programming, when she's doing her twice a day training, I'm having high carbohydrates. So I've got 3 days a week where it's high carbohydrate intake. Do you know what I mean? And then before her game days and blah, blah, blah. after her game days. So carbs aren't the enemy at all. And what I'm trying to say is this, it's specific to your activity you're doing. So they can be helpful. If you've got a glycolic sport, rugby, boxing, MMA, whatever, sprinting, maybe not. But my point is that fueling system will help you. It won't hinder you. So why not use it? You know, of course, you're just being stupid if you don't.
Yeah.
And then going back to the military side of life, you know, bear in mind, we're all high-end aerobic. Well, a lot of us at that level, we're fairly high-end aerobic endurance types. And we thought that we just, oh, God, you know, we've got a 10-mile test with, you know, our kit on our backs to go tomorrow. We better just get loads of pasta down ourselves and rice and bread. And I remember even in my backpack, I'd have like, I'd squish up bread and put it in my pack here so I could have it on the go. And, you know, Luke said, and all that type of thing. And gels and blah, blah, blah. So the carbohydrate intake was adequate for sure, but it wasn't necessary. And we now know that taking on board these carbohydrates all the time, there's a lot of oxidative damage and reactive oxidative species, and there's a lot of collateral damage when you're burning carbs. But if you weren't burning fats, the damage when you're metabolizing them is much less.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't worry, you can use them both is what we're trying to say. And the point I guess I'm trying to hammer is carbs aren't the enemy.
Yeah.
So use them strategically if they're going to help you. And certainly a high protein diet would be really, in my view, the ground zero for everybody, but you bolt on other things after that. I was just waffling on a little bit, going back to the military. I spent a couple of years up in Norway, up in the Arctic, doing Arctic warfare stuff. And we then, we're in the jungle, we're on half rations. We're in the Arctic, we're on, I think it was 5,000 calories a day. up plus, and it was up, but the calories, weirdly, and I know I'm disgraced now, but the calories was just, it was just calories. So we'd have puddings and desserts and chocolate and, you know, anything just to get the calories in.
Yeah.
And of course, we came back. It was fairly hard. You might be there for 2 months out, you're cold and, you know, all that stuff, you can imagine. When we got back to camp, we just smashed loads of food in us. Even the rations were high calorie, but none of us lost fat. I remember even to this day, none of us lost fat. Not that you want to lose fat. I'm just trying to say, you know, this whole calories in, calories out thing, I'm trying to point out that half calories, I didn't lose fat, and shitloads of sugary calories, I certainly added fat. And did it affect my performance? No. One little anecdote to that, Ash, if you don't mind, is recently I was down at Limpston, giving the book, was it Limpston or was it 42? Anyway, one of the commander units, giving them a talk to their MLs, you know, the mountain leaders, for their Arctic warfare stuff. And we were trying to come up with a way of fueling them. And I was trying to explain about, you know, pemmican and the Arctic explorers of yesteryear. They were all eating high fat and high protein. You know, there wasn't a carb in sight, hardly.
Yeah.
So, but of course, the problem they had is, in order to eat really well, good food, high protein, high fat costs money. And of course, the military has been cheapest bastards. They, you'll get the shittest food, but there you go.
No, and that brings home, doesn't it, why we're doing this chat. So we've talked about calories. We're going to talk about calories more as we do other podcasts. And again, it just shows where you've got your knowledge from. And that's what I wanted to bring across in this podcast, is like where your knowledge comes from, how you've actually been in different scenarios. You have lived primarily on carbohydrates, high carbohydrate diets, high calorific diets. So, you know, it just shows that the content that we're trying to deliver and create with, it's not done on a whim. It's not just because you want to eat meat and tell everyone else to eat meat. It's done with research, which we'll go into shortly, but also you've lived a lot of this as an experience, which is one of the important things. One thing that stood out on some of the chats we've done already is like with carbohydrates, they are not your enemy, but you got to, one thing you said is you got to earn your carbohydrates. And that's true, isn't it? You know, if you're not going out and doing the activity levels, if you're not doing the hard training, do you require those carbohydrates? Whether they're nice or not, it's a different story. But have you earned them? Out of interest, and without divulging a client's nutrition plan, but what sort of carbohydrates do you recommend? You mentioned about how for a sports-specific athlete, they do require those carbohydrate levels to be loaded a little bit heavier. What's your go-to?
Well, it would be the athlete. If it's a glycolic athlete, then yeah, I think carbohydrates will help. They're not necessary, but they can help. So anyway, my carbohydrates would be around the workout would be honey. Mm-hmm. And then after the workout would be white rice.
There you go.
I mean, there's more, obviously, but if someone said, what are the two? And what's the interesting thing about that is honey is a natural source. As in, you know, honey's honey from your local front door, as it were.
Yeah.
Don't get Manuka honey from Manuka land. That's from Manukans. You know, you want it from close to your front door. And white rice is what I call it. I describe as a non-offensive carb insofar as it will get the glucose into your system fairly quickly and rapidly. Don't worry about the white rice thing. It's good. You want to get it into your system. Yeah. And of course, the glycemic index is bullshit because no one eats white rice on its own.
Yeah.
So once you eat it with something else, the glycemic index will be closed anyway.
Yeah.
And actually, you want the glycemic index high if you're going to recover. So yeah. And if all that brown rice stuff is ridiculous.
Yeah. And with honey, you say about the Manuka land honey, it's all to do with our immune function, isn't it? And fighting off like your little local diseases. Just so people are aware, if you buy honey, we live in Devon. If you buy honey from Devon, it's going to help with any illnesses.
Allergies, basically.
Allergies we have in Devon, isn't it?
So they say.
That's great. So, you know, that was your military. And I know you've got some cool stories in the military. We're not going to go into your war stories. And they are war stories, mate, because you've done some amazing things. One of my favorite ones, just to touch on the close off the army side of things, was I think you told me you were in the jungle. You were doing, you're on a night watch or something like that with one of your mates. You're kind of both sat up and you felt a spider in your face, mate, didn't you? Was it a spider?
True, yeah.
A big ass spider landed on your face. Is this right?
This is true. So this is funny. Sorry, listeners, if you're listening to this, but it's a very funny story. that when you're on hard routine in the military, one of the systems you do is the four of you, four or six man team, but let's say four man team, which it was in this case, and you'd sit back to back and back to back, like in a star, but facing out, obviously, ready to roll, rifle ready, all that stuff. So kind of on alert, and you'd have 50-50 asleep and awake. But because you're interlinked, the guy that was sleeping, two sleeping, two on watch, and then, you know,
yeah.
you try to interlink and, you know, it never worked because but you're supposed to be upright asleep, two on, two off type thing. And one of the things that happened, I think I was sleeping and you're supposed to be upright, but I monged out and I got up because the bloke nudged me and and there's a bat on my face. And the bat, was on my face, so I just threw it off. Threw it off and the kid tried to come back to me, but of course, what sounds ridiculous. But what had happened is because I'd give myself a dead arm because I'm lying on it like a bit lunatic. Every time I touched my face, I thought it was a bat, I'd throw it away and come back. I just panicked for like 10 seconds. Anyway, you have to be there.
Hey, no, not at all. I mean, you know, a hand sized bat on your face, you know, it's not nice. I know you've been for a lot and you got some very high merits in the military as well. And then 2005, 2006, that's kind of where we touch base then, isn't it? Where our kind of journey started. You know, I was already at Fitness First as a personal trainer. I'd been there since 2002, 2003. So my personal training business was, I'd say I wasn't there. I was still growing it and still learning. And I think that's important to point out. I think you touched on it already. Like as a personal trainer, you think you know everything at the very start. And I think as a personal trainer, you want to know, maybe that's why it comes across, because you want to know everything. And I was definitely in my learning phase. You know, I'd been in the industry for 3-4 years, a little bit longer than that because I got into the industry a bit earlier without being qualified. But I was definitely on a learning journey and trying to work out how to most effectively guide my clients with training and nutrition and mindset, because that's the important thing that you learn on the job, really. You're not just programming for this person and showing them how to train and advising them on nutrition to show them how to eat, but it's how you're dealing with the barriers and getting them to where they want to be. That's probably the hardest thing, which you kind of learn when you get into the industry. But yeah, we met at Fitness First, and I remember you probably coming into the industry, and then we started like grabbing some beers around work, etc. And all of a sudden,
protein shakes,
obviously. But what I do remember is you kind of, it wasn't a rebelling thing, but you've obviously been in the military for 20 odd years, where everything is very much had to be done correctly and to a certain high standard. What I do remember when you first got in the industry is you growing your hair, walking around in boardies and flip-flops and loving life. And that's what it was for you, wasn't it? You know, do you know what I mean? It's like probably the first time in 2 decades you can actually walk around in flip-flops and boardies and grow your hair long, right?
Yeah, I thought I was like the new Devon hippie, just blowing. I was loving it, yeah.
And the worst thing is, like, when you come into the industry, you know, you made us all come into Fitness First, because back then there wasn't a load of trainers. There wasn't like 20 odd personal trainers there. You know, there was probably like a dozen, maybe. But you made us all like raise our games. All of a sudden this like 40-year-old dude comes in, long hair, boardies, flip-flops and abs just everywhere, which you still maintain now. And the reason you maintained your abs is, and this is why you're a good advocate about what we're talking about, is because you're disciplined with your training and you're disciplined with your nutrition and your lifestyle. That's why you're 54 now and you've got a set of abs. And if anyone wants abs, this is the point of my story. If anyone wants abs, you've just got to be disciplined. You've got to be disciplined with your training. You've got to be disciplined with your nutrition and the lifestyle to follow. And that's the key, isn't it?
You're right, mate. Discipline. And I think you have to be fairly relentless. Consistent is the word I'm trying to say. But I do remember that I really had a good time for that 2 years. I was Fitness First. And looking around, all you guys are already established. I was quite jealous of you young lads cutting around. So I kind of just did my own thing, but I learned a lot from watching you guys and how it all was. Now I've got to say publicly that I'm very, very grateful that I ended up in Fitness First, because back in those days there's only one or two gyms in town, wasn't there? And if you're a personal trainer, you had clients no matter what, really. But now, of course, there's a gym in every corner, and that's a bit more of a struggle, but that's another story. Ash, the thing about learning and when you leave one of your courses or any other personal training course or anything, you're bright and bushy-tailed, and you think, you've got great knowledge. There's no doubt about that. But the people that are successful, I think, are the ones that strive to learn more.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky, insofar as very quickly after doing the personal training course run by the Army for me, I ended up going to Dublin and doing a course. My first ever external course, as it were, apart from that, was with a guy called Charles Poliquin, who then I went on to do a load of courses and work with, sorry, courses with. And I remember sat there and we were surrounded by now guys that I now know are Christian Tubajur and Phil Richards and you know, all these international superhero coaches and little old me. So I was a level three personal trainer, didn't know my ass or my elbow. And it was a full week in Dublin. And my God, I thought, holy shit, I do not know a thing. So I thought, you know, for about 5 minutes, I sat there going, fuck, I was kind of overwhelmed. And then I thought, right, you need to pull your finger out here. So I remember my pen was on speed dial. And I was taking notes. And then at night, I'd write it up. And I think the point is, I could have sank there. I really, really could have, looking back, that was a pivotal moment, sat in that hall, listened to him. And I could have sank there and gone, actually, Jesus, I know nothing. And kind of, anyway, cut long story short, I kind of pulled my socks up and decided to learn. And then went on for the next 10 years doing a residential course every year and learning something. But the point being, even, I'm not even, I don't mean that, but every day I'm learning something new, whether watching something you do or watching something on YouTube or reading an article or send me a link about the latest study about carbohydrate intake, for example, you know, athletic development for XYZ. But learning is a key, continued.
I think it is. And it's like any profession, isn't it? No matter what your profession, whether it's as a personal trainer or whatever, you always want to be driven to learn more. And that's the key. And I think for the first couple of years at Fitness First, you were obviously into trying to build your business. And I think you still got a lot of your original clients now, haven't you? You know, like you've got a handful of your original. And that's one of the great things about personal trainers. One thing I've always loved about it is you meet these people. Yes, they become your clients, but then they also become your mates in a way as well. And you want a client for life. And that's what a lot of your clients will become. You know, it's a lot, especially if you do your job right, where you're kind of educating them, and but you're supporting them and you're helping them on their journey. And that's key, because I bet you could say as well, like every client you've had, there's ups and downs. Like, what, you know, for a few months they're doing amazingly, a few years maybe, but then everyone gets their blips. And it's like, as a personal trainer, you have to like help them through those blips essentially as well. But you're right. I think like as a level three personal trainer, I was definitely in that mindset of, I never pretend to like I knew everything, but I wanted to learn a lot. But I'll be honest with you, when I met you, I was like mid to late 20s. I had my level three. I was loving my career as a personal trainer. I was loving my job. I was going in early in the morning to train some clients, earning a good few bit of money before breakfast, and then doing a few more, you know, doing a training session myself. So I was always in that gym environment, so I could train once, twice a day. I could go drive up to North Devon and have a quick surf, you know, so life was really good. But the one thing I forgot to do early days in my career, probably for the first 4 or 5 years, is to learn. And I remember I'm a big believer in fate as well. And I think fate knocked on your door a little bit, because we went to Loughborough for Fit Pro convention, which was a good weekend. And I was sat with you in a lecture by Charles Poliquin. And I remember being sat there. You touched on it then about when you went on his course, how you felt out of depth. I felt out of depth in a 1 hour chat that Charles Poliquin was given. I was sat there thinking, I don't know any of this. I made some notes. I haven't got a clue what I wrote down, because when I look back over, I didn't know what I was reading. And it just goes to showcase. I'm not saying that you then need to go and learn this amazing information that's on the next level up. But I think it just showcases how important it is to try to keep your head in the game, keep learning, not every now and then, but all the time. Like, just whether that's reading a book or doing a course. Brings me back to fate, is he picked your card out of a bowl, wasn't it? Is that right? Yeah. So your first course with Charles Poliquin, I don't know if you got it free or discounted, but that's how you ended up there. And how cool is that in terms of fate, you know? And that's, you ended up as, you know, I could have ended up with that free course, and I probably wouldn't have done anything with it, not like you've done. You know, you went out there, you had the mindset to say, right, I feel like my depth here. I'm either going to be swamped and go home with nothing, or I'm going to pull my socks up and learn. And that's what you did. And to be fair, this is, again, what I want to showcase in this podcast. What you've learned is in depth. If people don't know who Charles Poliquin is, obviously, sadly, he passed away a year ago. But the stuff that he did was very innovative in a way, wasn't it? In how he kind of got it across and the courses he developed. And that's the stuff that you've learned over the past few years, not just about food, but about the hormonal balance of the body, how we store fat, why we store fat. And that's what I want people to know. This is your background. And you did that you're still kind of learning through his academy now. Is that right? Or in some way, in a direct way?
indirectly. So I guess if people want to know the further learning, I think one of the most important things is to try to do some form of formal learning, whether it be a course or something, you know, every year, but try to do some form of reading, you know, a couple of times a week. And I certainly try to do some form of reading every single day. And what I'm trying to do also, because I realize I'm getting quite biased in my thoughts, I'm trying now to ensure that I read stuff I don't necessarily agree with. You know, like, you know, the plant-based diets. I'm trying to read more on that because I don't agree with it, but I just want to kind of get more of a rounded picture. Otherwise, I'd become a bloody Hitler zealot, won't I? Yeah. But course-wise, with further learning, as it were, so I think I've done, I think the last count was about 11 courses under Charles, of which, you know, level one, level two, level three, national level, strength and conditioning, biosignature, one, two, and three, one and two, and muscle release techniques and all these things, you know. And I'm not saying that to show check me out, but it because he was arguably the most innovative kind of strength coach around at the time. You know, you learn from these guys who are the best, and even if you get a tiny bit of their knowledge, you know, you're on a kind of an upward curve. So and what I've noticed also, the people I bump into on his courses were all the same guys that are training, you know, they're coaches at Leicester, or they're, you know, all over the place. Or the coaches at Bath now, and you know, these guys are top end guys. They all learn basically from, and others, of course, you know. But yeah, I think the point I'm trying to say here is try to keep on learning all the time, and try to look at stuff that you don't necessarily agree with, because it'll give you more of a rounded picture and stop you being such an aggressive asshole. Because I remember doing a couple of courses when I was young, and first I thought, fuck me, I'm just awesome. You know, I've learned from Charles Poliquin on the dog's bollocks. Yeah. And then after a while, you go, okay, I need to be a bit more rounded and calm myself down and learn from other people and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and it's true, isn't it? And to point out as well, which you said, it wasn't just nutrition hormonal analysis.
A lot of strength and conditioning.
Training, strength and conditioning work as well.
Strength and conditioning, I should say, was probably 50% of it was all strength and conditioning. But I don't actually practice that much, because your most clientele aren't interested in 90% of your knowledge, as it were. So when I get someone who's a high-end athlete, let's say bobsleigh or whatever, it's great because you can really go into town and apply.
Yeah. And I'm on that point as well. You know, the health and safety, the health and fitness industry can be a bit of a bitchy industry as well, a little bit, where even Charles Poliquin, he was a bit divided. You know, some people took everything he said, like yourself, and just really absorbed it and learned more from that. Other people would discredit everything he's done and say, oh, no, I don't listen to that guy and all this sort of stuff. With the fitness industry, no matter who you follow, what courses you do, just, and this is exactly what you just said then, even if you don't agree with it, just be a bit open-minded and take on board what others are saying about it without just discrediting, without reading in it or researching it. This is why I'm excited about the work that we're doing together and why we're collaborating, is because you've learned a lot over the years by doing courses, reading articles. I've learned a lot from experience, reading. I'll be honest with you, I've not done a shitload of courses. I look back on my life and I wish I had time or committed to do more courses. But what I really enjoy is the stuff we're putting together. And we're not saying this is the way forward for everyone, but what we're doing is just taking information that's been given by these top individuals who have spent hours upon hours upon hours researching, studying, working with top level individuals in their trade. And we're just reiterating it to people who want to listen to us. And we're not saying this is what you must do. This is what I talk about your podcast. You know, we've done our nutrition seminar, and we had a vegan girl come to our nutrition seminar where you're blatantly saying about like the importance of proteins and fats. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to eat animals, obviously, but we are selling it in that way of our beliefs are, you know, we're thinking about what the body is designed to be eating, like eating nose to tail is something you reference quite a lot, but we're just trying to put it out that we have an open bias. And it's, I think the girl who came onto our nutrition seminar, she's done our course, she's a lovely girl. She's always looking to further her knowledge as well. But she took a lot from that, even as a vegan. So this is the key thing. Just be open-minded and just try to learn as much as you possibly can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You do whatever you want to do, of course. But like you've just said, try to listen to other people's point of view and, you know, take away what you think might be useful and discard the rest. But certainly listen to it. You know, two ears, one mouth.
Yeah, that's it. Well, mate, you've done a lot. So you, obviously, we go got to know each other well at Fitness First. And this is another good thing about the fitness industry. You make some great individuals, whether they've become work colleagues or good mates and stuff like that. You ended up being an usher at my wedding. I'm godfather to one of your sons. And it's that sort of thing. You make these cool connections, don't you? Before we get into you opening up your own gym at the Fitness First days, you know, we did it was great, you know, working around these other professionals who've got the same sort of interest and ethos for the industry that you have. I remember me being your punch bag for one or, you know, quite a few occasions where you're training for like this amateur boxing fight sort, because you've got a boxing background as well, haven't you? And you're like, let's go do some sparring up in the spinning studio, it'd be fine. I'm like, okay, mate, yeah, I hit a bag, but I've never hit a person, okay. And then, like, honestly, it was the hardest 2-3 minute rounds of my life. You know, I realized it's not just hard throwing punches, it's hard being hit at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And there you are.
I realized what a body shot was.
Yeah. And funny enough, that's, I mean, slightly going off tangent, that's different energy systems. So, you know, you've got to train in order to get better at that. Yeah. And how would you do that? You know, you need a bit of strength, you need a bit of circuit style, and you need a long, steady state as well to open up the heart thing. But
that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. But mate, you know, you built your business at Fitness First. You got a good client base.
I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, you got a good client base. You then left Fitness First to set up your gym. Not the gym you have now, but your first gym. And I remember you opening it. It was Omarsh Barton, so it was only like, you know, 2-3 miles away from where Fitness First was. But it was a pretty much, it was bigger than a one-to-one personal training studio. It was enough to house a couple of personal trainers, wasn't it? But that was an exciting time for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. So, and of course, we were going back in the day, it was golden era, really, because, you know, there's only one or two gyms in town. And, you know, so if I opened up the first kind of like independent gym, as it were, you know, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
And it was a little studio. And that's where you branch out on your own. You realize, you know, you've got to pay bills. You've got to think about rent and rates and, you know, business rates, I'd never heard of those. What the hell are they? Some guy just taking loads of money a month just for nothing. And then, you know, all that stuff. And so all of a sudden you grow exponentially from, you know, you just learn shit that you need to learn in order to survive, and dealing with energy company, you know, dealing with the council, dealing with your rent, blah, blah, blah. But that was very satisfying. And I realized after about a year or two, I thought, this is fantastic. But there's only small space and I have to be here to earn money one-to-one. And then I tried to get other personal trainers to use it. And there's probably about a room for 2 personal trainers and 2 clients, you know. And then I thought, okay, this is great, but why don't I just open a bigger space? So then I left that place and 2 years later opened the other place. Mm-hmm. And then that was a big space and that became more of a gym, albeit still smallish, but you know, now you get maybe 30, 40, 50 members in, well, maybe 20, actually. And then 2 years after that, you know, I just expanded that, put a mezzanine up, so it's now 2 floors. And then 2 years after that, I opened another gym up in Cullumpton. So it seems to me that I get itchy feet every 2 years. I want to do something. And then I planned the coronavirus, which has been great. So that's been a great experience. Thank you. So anyway, it just grew. It was a small unit, you know, small personal training Fitness First. Realised I was a bit too old and smelly to be cutting around with you young lads. Branched out, and then branched out again and again. Now I've got the 2 gyms, and without the coronavirus, I was thinking about opening a 3rd one in Wales, or somewhere else, but now, you know, obviously coronavirus has kind of like put a spanner in the works for the time being, but we'll see. I'll stop talking there, Ash, and let you carry on, because otherwise I'll just waffle on about all sorts of shit.
I'm intrigued by you have to be what.
Go on.
All I was going to say there is I think what you have now is definitely something that wasn't around. When did you open your first gym? Was it 2008,
2009? 2008.
It just shows the diversity of the industry. So obviously from my side of things now, I run personal training courses, and a lot of students will say to me, like, what are my options once I finish? Now there's so many options. When I qualified, even when you qualified, there wasn't many. You know, you moved down to Devon, you look at, like, what gyms can I go and chat to about doing my personal training business? I'm newly qualified. You see what? You see Fitness First, and you saw what, a couple of council run gyms, and that was it, wasn't it?
That was it back in those days, mate. Yeah, that was
it. I had. Same as what I had. And then, you know, and then you opened your small gym even before we had a David Lloyd in Exeter, you know?
Yeah, so, correct.
And now, 10 years plus later, there's lots of independent gyms. There's lots of Globo gyms as well, like your Fitness First, David Lloyd's. This isn't just in Exeter. You know, if you listen to this from another city, you've probably got like a dozen main chain gyms as well. Anytime Fitness, Pure Gym, all of this sort of stuff. What I think is great about what you've done, about which helps me, if I'm honest with you, talking to students and potential students about where they can go, is they now have many, many options. You know, they can go to a big gym like a Fitness First. I'm not going to slate Fitness First. I was there for 10 years. I met some great people there. I built up a business there. I had a, you know, it was brilliant. And I left Fitness First and I did a little stint at your gym, PFP, as I had a little transition from my personal training business into the academy, which I run now. But I think what students have and what personal trainers have nowadays is options. And where you kind of hit the nail on the head is when you say, right, I've got a small PT studio, which I enjoy, and I can maybe have one or two other personal trainers working here as well. So you get a little bit of a passive income from them. Why don't I just do this on a bigger scale? And that's what you did. So now, not only did it benefit you as your business, you've made a pretty unique gym, let's be fair. You know, you've got Atlas stones out the front of your gym. You've got squat racks with and tires and all sorts of stuff outside your gym, let alone in the gym. You were probably the only gym in Exeter for a long time to have a prowler, for God's sake. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't until you had one that other gyms, even like Fitness First, started thinking, oh, we could get a prowler in. Because again, it's these sort of elements in a gym which weren't around 10 years ago sort of thing. When we both started in the gym environment, you didn't have tires and prowlers and stuff like that. And you kind of brought that in, and that's where your gym is unique. And still is to a point around, even around Exeter. I know there's a few other people that have a similar setup, but nothing to the extent that you have. But what you offer, which I think is great for this industry, is a really good setup for personal trainers. Not just personal trainers. Even if you're a sports massage therapist, you've got a room that people can use as a sports massage therapist, for example.
Yeah.
So the difference is, and this is one thing I just want to relate quickly, is that as a newly qualified personal trainer, go to a Fitness First, Anytime, David Lloyd's, it will help you build your business, definitely. But you don't, it's not your only option. You have a really good setup for personal trainers where they pay for when they're there, and that's it. A lot of the big gyms, I'm not going to discredit them because they've definitely got their place, and they helped me, they helped you, they helped a lot of individuals build their business. And there's a lot of people still there now that have had their business there for multiple years. But you're paying week in, week out, whether you're doing 30 clients a week or 10 or 5 clients a week. You know, you're paying a lot of money to be there. What you have, which is a great setup, and what I think this industry needs, is a gym where an individual can go and say, right, I've only got 5 sessions booked in this week, that's all I can manage. So you're not getting them to pay a full weekly rent, you're just getting them to pay for the 5 sessions. You know, I mean, to get, so people can understand, if there's anyone listening to this now as a personal trainer thinking about signing up at your gym, it's basically £10 a session to train someone at your gym, and that gets capped at 90 quid, is that right?
80
quid. So the beauty, and this is why I think this is what this industry needs as a personal trainer. If you're doing 5 sessions of personal training a week, instead of paying £150 a week to use a facility to train those 5 people, that's a big chunk of your income. If you've got an independent gym like yourself, that's £50 a week just to train those 5 clients. If you then train 15 clients, you're not paying £150 a week, you're just paying £80 a week. So it's a great setup. And you've got some really good, it's not just a case it's a great setup, you've got some great fitness professionals, some great personal trainers working out of your facility as well. One of our head tutors is working there, Pete Howard, he works out of your place. It's a
very
lucky setup,
actually.
What you've done.
I'm very lucky. I mean, I'll plug it slightly if you don't mind, Ash. It's a tenner a go, pay as you go, or 80 quid unlimited. So that means you come day or night. And train a billion clients a week if you want, and only pay 80 quid.
Yeah.
And it's world-class equipment. I would say that, but it's kind of true. Mm. And the other thing, there's 2 gyms. So if you're PTing at one, you're also PTing at the other. And it's not an added cost.
Mm.
And I'm very lucky as far as the manager up in Curly is the 5 times and current world powerlifting drug-free champion. I've got, you know, the likes of Pete, who's a trains the trainers, one of your guys, good egg. I've got Norbu, who's ex-Polish judo and regional level strongman, PTing. I've got Matt, who's just a good all-round guy, and he's transformed himself amazingly. And a couple of other guys coming in who competed strongman. And some of the girls are freakishly strong. And it's a nice vibe, but I'm very pleased that it manages itself insofar as all the members kind of look after it. And there's a bit of respect shown, and we have this hashtag no dickheads. And basically, I cannot turn up for days on end, and the place is going to be fine because the members will lock it up and do their own thing and blah, blah, blah. So I'm quite pleased how it's turned out, to be fair. I guess it's just the ethos that comes through the walls that we don't tolerate kind of people that rate themselves too highly.
Well, but you've got a good group of people there as well, and you all learn from each other as well. You know, you've told me, you know, having more personal trainers there is great because you get to have not just chats and banter and stuff like that, but you get to have discussions, and it's another way of learning and furthering your knowledge, isn't it? By
there's always something someone does and goes, oh, that's a good idea. You know, always something, oh, I never thought of that. And then, you know, you think you know everything, then, oh, Christ, that's a good, yeah. Why don't I do that? You know, it's all good.
And that's how the industry should be. I think, again, it can be perceived as a bit of a bitchy industry sometimes. Like, even, you know, back in our day, I remember like other trainers coming up to me and saying, Ash, that training over there is doing a set method that I was doing with my client last week. He's pinching my ideas and stuff like that. It's like, mate, come on.
Oh,
a squat's a squat, a deadlift's a deadlift. You know, however you do a superset or a tri-set, it doesn't really matter. It's a case of we should all learn from each other. And that's definitely the vibe that your gym, PFP, Precision Fitness and Performance, that's what it gives. You know, and you've obviously got your one in Exeter, which is now, you know, I remember when you put the mezzanine in, I think that actually popped up on a memory on my Facebook a little while ago as well, when it, you know, putting the mezzanine in sort of thing, and it just doubled the floor space, which was great. And you've obviously got your gym in Columpton. And I know, obviously, because of coronavirus, it's put future plans you had on a bit of hiatus, but, you know, as you say, you're always thinking about developing, and that's an important thing for any professional to always think, how can I better what I do now? And that's what you're doing effectively, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's funny, that story, but I put the mezzanine up. That's just a really quick anecdote about the mezzanine up. So I was quite proud. I had to close the gym for a couple of days while you put the frame up. And the frame cost X amount of thousands. And my first client on the Monday morning when we opened, she walked in. She's lovely, by the way. She walked in and went, oh, wow, James, this is great. And she said, oh, how much does that cost? You know, just chat. And I said, oh, that, you know, it's not quite finished yet, but it costs X amount of thousand. And she went, oh, that's the same price as my handbag, which was, and I went, oh, it's a different world out there.
It is. We just dip and do whatever we can to get by, isn't it, really? And to create.
That's very funny. So I obviously told her to fuck off. She was a good girl.
But mate, it just goes to show, doesn't it, within this industry, just really strive to do whatever you want to do with it, because, you know, you did, you know, you thought, I want to open my gym. You went forward, you opened your gym, you know, I'm not going to say it's been an easy process for you. You've had ups and downs with it as well. You've had challenges that you've overcome. This year has been a challenge as well, I know. But what you've done is create something really good, which has just benefited the industry for down here in Devon. And you have, as you say, a lot of good fitness professionals working out there. You've got a lot of members, and you've got a lot of athletes that utilize your space as well. You know, you've got top athletes, bobsleigh. You tell me, who's used your gym? Let's name drop a few, Paddy. Come on.
Well, we've got, I won't say names, but we've got GB bobsleigh, who's actually this week gone up to Bath to prepare. Sam, we've got regional level strongmen that come in. And we've done the, you know, all the world strongmen have been down there to give lectures. And then the rugby, I better not say the rugby names because there might be conflict of interest with the Chiefs boys coming, because they kind of train up there as well. Mm. And a couple of England, but, you know, I can't name names. It's probably not the best thing to do on here. But for sure, you got guys that compete at the Olympics or at world level. And then a lot of national level guys, and then just normal people that just, you know, want to look good in the mirror, and the girls that, you know, doing their bits and pieces. So it's quite nice, and there's no egos. It's quite cool. Or we pretend not to have egos. Of course we have, but we try not to. Try to pretend to be nice people. But the point is, it's a nice broad spread. You might go in there. You might have Pete training one of a little old lady. You might have Norbert training us. I don't mean that Pete that's already trained, by the way. You might have Norbert chucking some Atlas Stones around. You might have me kind of hobbling around making tea, and it's a great cost spectrum of top athletes right down to normal people, as it were, just want to look good in the mirror.
I think for everything as well, and to plug it a little bit, because why not? I think people should just go around, have a look. You know, let's go with feedback. You know, some people look at it and it is a gym. It's a gym where you go to train. That's one of your gym rules, effectively, isn't it? You go there, you train.
Effectively. Come to train and go home.
That's the efforts that you want. But just go down and have a look at it. Have a look at it, whether you want a space to train from. Have a look at it if it's you're looking for a base to place your business in, which is fair as well. And you're not just got a fair deal, but you're going to be surrounded by people who are very open to helping others. And that's the key thing. You know, what you created, and it's because of your rule of no dickheads. You don't have any dickheads, even as coaches. They're all really great individuals who want to help others and learn from others as well. And that's kind of what you created. And it's quite cool for you. You must look back sometimes, because we talk a lot about reflective practice and sitting back and thinking, what have I achieved over the last 5 years? You must sit back sometimes and be quite chuffed about what you've developed and created, right?
I you're right, Ash. I think it's important. Before, I used to shy away from kind of going, things are good and all that, because it's not very Catholic of me, and I've been brought up to always punish myself type of thing. But I think sometimes it's quite a good idea to have a positive, you know, you try to be positive with other people, you should try to be positive about yourself as well. And without being arrogant, of course, you've got to look, okay, I did a reasonably good job there. You know, well done. Or sometimes I did a reasonably good job there. I learned some lessons. I could have done better. The point being, be gentle with yourself, as my mum used to say, you know. And the recently with the bloody global thing, it's not me, of course, it's everyone else in the whole world, you know, put a damper on things. But I think we've got to dust yourself off and try to go again. Yeah. And what I found is when times are tough, some people will do desperate things and the true character will come out. And you can see that quite a bit with people kind of doing silly, desperate things and undercutting people and, you know, being a bit bitchy and horrible. But just try not to. Try to be nice to people. Yeah, we spoke about it before with the old reflective journals, haven't we? Grateful logs and all that. Anyway, just going off a tangent there slightly. But you don't have to be an asshole to be fair, reasonably decent what you do.
That's it, mate. There you go. Just to finish with then, so plans going forwards, I know your plans are on hiatus. I know you've got a desire to open up another facility, which hopefully might happen again soon. I know that's not going to happen as soon as you'd like because of where we are. But other stuff on the boil. So we've got, we're working hard to put this advanced nutrition course together. This is on hiatus. We can't carry on with that until... which is looking more and more likely that it might happen in the next couple of months, where we can get people into, we use a really good facility, Darts Farm in Topsham, and the reason we've used Darts Farm to do our nutrition seminars is because it's about local produce, good produce. It's an amazing venue anyway. So we'll hopefully be back in there very soon to do seminar number two from our advanced nutrition course. The reason we call it advanced nutrition is, it's not because you have to have an amazing knowledge of nutrition to attend it. It's more so for the case of what we're trying to do is take nutrition to that next level. And I've said this to a couple of people that have attended our first seminar in this advanced nutrition course that we're putting together. Like they think, wow, it's advanced nutrition. Do I not need to get basic nutrition knowledge first? And it's not. It's just about showcasing and giving a bit of clarity to people. And probably dispelling a lot of the myths around nutrition and diets and stuff like that, isn't it? So that's what we're about. And the reason we call it advanced nutrition, I think, it's just because you've learned a lot over the last 15 years in the nutrition world. You're always learning now. You're very, people might think you're biased, but you're very non-biased in terms of you do try to take on every side of the argument. But what we're trying to put across here is the reason why proteins and fats are important. Carbohydrates, the type of carbohydrates you should be consuming. Calories in, calories out. Is it a really good thing to utilize with your clients and for yourself? So we're just trying to give clarity. So hopefully next couple of months we might get in there for seminar number two for that one, won't we?
That would be quite cool because we're all ready to go. I've actually got the lecture on here, ready to roll. So it's all good. And you're right, Ash. Although we've touted it as advanced nutrition, I think probably it's advanced explanation of a simple topic is probably a better way of saying it, isn't it? Because after all, you know, a zebra doesn't have to be a rocket scientist to eat what a zebra is designed to eat. We're the same, but you have to explain why to people so they go, because there's so much misinformation out there. eat this bar, eat that bar, do this, do that. Do I need a protein shake? Blah, blah, blah. You know, so.
Well, we got so much good feedback from Seminar One. If anyone, it doesn't have to be a case of if you miss Seminar One, you can't make Seminar Two. Each seminar has got a different topic altogether. We'll start advertising this very soon as well, once we know we can start putting a plan in place to deliver again. But each seminar we've got, what we got? We've got five seminars planned, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously that might change as we go through. But each seminar is different. So if you miss the first one, you can come along to the second one. It's amazing value. Let me put this as a finisher. What are we charging for this? I can't remember what we charge for this seminar now. Is it like 50 quid, something like that?
I think around about the 40 quid mark, whatever.
Point is, for one seminar, which we taught, you did about, what, 2.5 hours, 3 hours on the seminar?
3.5 hours, mate. My brain was cooked.
There you go. We got across a lot of good information, which it doesn't stop there, because we're building an online course out of this as well, which people can then reflect back and refer back to the information discussed. You've spent thousands, absolutely thousands over the years on your nutritional knowledge. And I think this is what showcases what good value that you're giving. Is you went out to Dublin for the first, even though that was free, I think it was free because you won it in that thing.
Yeah, I won it, which believes.
Dublin. Do you know what I mean? You had to pay to get to Dublin. But every year then you were spending a good few thousand each year on upskilling that knowledge, weren't you?
Yeah, you end up going from places like Sweden, to Rhode Island, to Santander, to all over the place. It's a pain in the ass, actually.
It sounds lovely, but once you're there, you're there. It's just like, okay, so you learn, you go back to your hotel, you fry.
Yeah, exactly. Great, okay.
But mate, that's what I'm very grateful for, mate. You know, you've got you've spent a lot of time and effort and money getting this knowledge. I'm just grateful that, you know, we're working together to give this knowledge out to the masses, because I think it's great value. I know when the full course is done and we're going to promote this and sell it as an online course as well, we'll probably still end up doing seminars in some way as well, I think, because I think it's quite nice, isn't it, standing up in front of a group of people and having that sort of vibe where you've got Q&As, etc.
Yeah, it is. I think Q&A will be really important, mate, because...
Yeah. But also, like, you know, at the end of it, we're going to have an online course which will sell for a few £100. And it might seem a lot. And maybe someone's listening to this in a year time when our online course is fully out there. It's on our website. They can purchase it. If it's there now, go and buy it, because it's great value. You spent thousands of pounds, so much hours of knowledge gone into this. And it's a bit of a gimme, really, isn't it? You know, in terms of giving a lot of clarity to a simple topic, which can often be very overcomplicated and sold in the wrong way. So that's what I'm grateful for, mate. And that's why, you know, it's great to see your journey in the industry as well. You know, I know you are still a personal trainer, you're a level 3 personal trainer, but you're also a strength and conditioning coach, you're a nutritionist, you've got all these extra added value to give to your clients and those around you, you know. Anything you want to finish on with, mate?
No, buddy, I think you've covered it really. It's just the lifelong journey of been kind of fairly active since the age of 6 years old, right through to now, where I'm old and smelly and grey and can't kind of run across the street. So there you go.
You're only 54. Still young, mate. If I look, you're as good as you at 54, mate. If I've got a 6-pack at 54, I've not got one at 40. So you know, I'll be chuffed.
But there is a thing, isn't there? I mean, just passingly, that if you've got a 6-pack, you're probably a miserable bastard, and there you are.
you can be quite miserable at times, mate. That is true.
That's true. That's true.
Other than the nutrition course we're doing, mate, have you? And I know your gym's on. You got any other plans over the next couple of years,
mate? Now, honestly, this has thrown me. Apart from personal stuff, moving house and all that business, but I won't bore you with that. But I've got to just make sure the dust settles after the bloody virus. And same as everyone, you know, we just got to reset. Same as yourself, everyone, you know. So, I think I'll just hold fire on that question, mate, for another 6 months.
Well, I hope once gyms can open up properly. Again,
come on, Boris. Let's open.
Yeah, exactly. Open the gyms. I really hope that, you know, everyone's doing great with training their clients at home. Individuals are doing great with training at home. But let's be fair, it's been a learning curve. And I know a lot of people enjoy training at home, but you can't beat training in a gym environment, getting that gym vibe. And I think a lot of people I've talked with over the last few months are itching to get back into that gym environment. Obviously, it might be a little bit different at the start, but the good thing for you with an independent gym is it's easier for you to manage. It's easier for you to put any restrictions that need to be in place. You can put them in place very easily, as opposed to a David Lloyd's, where they're probably going to have some sort of like closed off one way system thing going on for you, smaller gym, it's very easy for you to set these guidelines in place, isn't it? And hopefully a lot of people are going to go flooding back to your gym once all of this is over.
This time next year, Rodders, we'll be millionaires.
Yeah, exactly. That's the plan, isn't it? I'll put a link to your website. I'll tell everyone the website name. It's worth precisionperformance.co.uk, isn't it?
Well, you can make it easier now. It's pfpexeter.co.uk. So papafoxtrotpapaexeter.co.uk.
Is that the same site as well?
Yeah, it links to the same thing, mate. Yeah, so okay. PFP Exeter does the trick.
I do encourage everyone, anyone listening to this, to go check out the website, check out the venue, and check out you as well. You know, you're still coaching. You know, you're offering nutrition advice, you're offering training. So, you know, there's lots people can learn from you. And people should just be up for investing in their future, whether that's learning more educational, investing in their health, you know, so there's lots to offer. So check out your website is what I'm trying to say.
Cheers, Ash. Good man.
All right, mate. Well, listen, mate, it's been great having you on. We've got your story done. I know you're very modest, and you actually said to me, I'm a bit nervous about this one. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, it's a bit, weird. It's kind of a weird one, isn't it? You, it's nice to talk about yourself, but equally you feel a bit of a kind of a, you know, bit of a look at me type thing. It's quite not a tough one. But hey,
you're too modest.
I think we hit a fair balance.
I think so. And it's been great because we've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to get into some training podcasts and stuff like that over the next half a dozen as well. Which I know you're excited about talking about. But yeah, I think it's important for anyone listening to what we say, hopefully doing like going to your gym, maybe using your services, doing an advanced nutrition course. I think it is important to know a bit about the man you're learning from. So that's what today's podcast was all about. So thanks for having you on, mate. We'll plan a next one. We shouldn't have a 2-week break this time, should we? Like get one in next week, I think. What do you reckon?
Just being busy boy, moving house and stuff like that. But yeah, it'd be good to crack on again, Ash, as always.
Cool. All right, mate. Thanks for having you on. And I'll speak to you soon.
Take care, buddy.
Cheers, mate. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. You can find all of our podcasts on Apple Music, Spotify, and they're even on our website at www.performancetrainingacademy.com. As mentioned at the end of that podcast, you can see more of what James Bockingham offers, and you can check out his gym by going to www.pfpexeter.co.uk. We'll be back next week with another podcast, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening.